Purdy and Fig, entirely based in the United Kingdom, is one of the best D2C businesses that I have been around in my time in e-commerce, and it is operated by one of the best e-commerce operators I've been around in my time in e-commerce, and that is Jack Rubin. Purdy and Fig sells cleaning products, one product to clean everything in your house, a spray bottle with cleaning concentrates, and it's a subscription brand that is just an absolute monster. If you have followed my content for a little while, you might remember that Jack Rubin, the founder and CEO of Purdy and Fig, was on the show a while back talking about the growth they were experiencing and how far they were going, and it's just been insane growth. I'll let him speak to the numbers about where they're at now and give as much of that detail as he wants to. But today, the whole reason I brought Jack on the show is because I want you, as a listener or viewer of my content, to hear what operational excellence looks like in a D2C business, both at the level of what makes the business good and also the thoughtfulness of Jack as a CEO. I've worked with Jack in a small coaching capacity, played this very, very, very small role in this business. And the reason I bring that up here is not to take any credit for it, but simply to say, I can tell you that while there are many people telling you about businesses on the internet, sometimes you wonder if the story is actually true. I have actually gotten a look under the hood of this business and can tell you it is actually true, what you're about to hear in terms of how well run and how well executed this business is. So that is the reason to listen and to watch, learn from somebody doing a great job in a great D2C business with a lot of the elements that really, really make it good. Let's dive into the story of where Purdy and Fig is at now, things around offer testing, around scaling meta ads, around operating a lean business, all kinds of stuff that we can get into. I'm talking too much in the intro. Let me stop talking to Jack Rubin from Purdy and Fig. All right, Jack, thanks for coming and doing this again, man. We did this a while ago. And I'm glad that you are back on to talk again. You heard me give the intro. I'm giving you some glowing praise here, and I mean every word of it. You're an awesome operator, and I really appreciate you coming to talk about it.
Thanks, Andrew. Yeah, good to be back on. It's nice praise indeed. I mean, when you're in the middle of it, you don't feel like an excellent operator or anything like that. So it's nice to hear it.
That's really funny. Is that you don't feel like that? You don't feel like you just see all the problems?
Yeah. Especially I think the size we're getting to now, those problems here, they become a bit realer, and there's always new challenges. So you always feel slightly behind the curve of where you should be, which I think is natural.
Yeah. I have a theory about this, which is actually that strategic competence is a double-edged sword. That the whole reason you feel those things is because the problems in your business are very, very clear to you. That's exactly what makes you good at solving them, of course. And so like, it's really hard to be good at solving problems if you aren't very clear about what they are. But when you're very clear about what they are, they really eat away at you. And when they eat away at you, it makes you want to solve them. So it's this like vicious cycle that makes you kind of realize that the job is never done. There's always another game to win. And so probably your feeling of like, oh man, I have all these problems or whatever. Yeah, maybe I can provide some outside perspective there because.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I do try and open the bonnet on things a lot. And so it's kind of like, if you're going to open the bonnet and have a look inside, you're going to find stuff you don't like. But I always prefer to open the bonnet than not to.
Yeah, well, so I had you on a while ago now. I don't know, maybe a year ago or something. That episode is also really worth listening to. The link is in the show notes there, of course. But we talked about kind of where you guys were at, this incredible growth you were experiencing. And you know, since then, you guys have really continued to do that. You've continued to sort of go along the path that we laid out at the time of where kind of the business was getting to. Can you give people some sense of where Purdy and Fig is at? You can share as much or as little about this, or as vague or not as possible, as you would like. It's up to you. But give some people a sense of what the business is. And again, just for listeners, this business only operates in the UK. So, you know, there's about a quarter of people in the UK as there are in the US. So in terms of the penetration relative to the size of the market, that's context.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're kind of in the same position we were 6 months ago whenever we spoke, which is quite typical of Purdy and Fig. We don't really do many new things. So we're still one channel, one market, only subscription, pretty much. So yeah, That's all the same. But yeah, we've just acquired a ton more customers, and actually more customers than we even expected to. We've been growing super fast. We posted our 19 million pound year top line. That's in the bank, and we're now pushing towards a kind of 40 to 50 million pound year, depending on how advertising goes. So we're in a good place and just acquiring a ton of customers and growing fast.
So that's a monster business that you guys are going to get to. It means you're going to probably more than double again. in the next year. And of course, the exchange rate being what it is, that's like a $60 or $70 million business in the US. Again, only in the UK, growing real fast and doing that really effectively.
And by the way, we take sales tax off our revenue as well, by the way.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, that's 20% off.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a real number. So you guys have done that. Let's start by thinking about sort of like this core mechanism. You just said something interesting, which is like you only do one thing. Talk about that a little.
Yeah. I mean, one of the core values of the business is both simplicity and focus. So we really try and make a lot of businesses say they're simple, but very few businesses are simple. A lot of businesses say they're focused, very few are. So focus as defined in our business is saying no to things that you, not that seem like a nice thing to do, but that you really want to do, that you'd be very excited to do and say no to them anyway.
What are some of those things? What have you said no to so far?
I mean, we've got products that are ready to go and not launching. We would love to launch into the US. We think we could absolutely kill it in the US. In Europe, all we have to do is press a button to sell in Europe. We're not doing that. We've got offers to go into retail and to big retail in the UK. You know, not doing that. We've also had offers to raise a lot of money, and we've said no to that. And you know, all of those things are they're all linked to simplicity and focus. So raising money means that you become unfocused and you do more things that makes your business more complicated. Launching products makes your business more complicated. You've got more SKUs to manage, more inventory, but also different funnels and offers with different contribution margins. And again, dilutes focus, you're advertising different value propositions. So by just doing one thing really, really well and forcing your team to do that one thing really well, you get major compounding benefits, I think.
Yeah. Some businesses can't do that just by nature of what the product is. They have to introduce other products at some point, at least. And it's possible, it's possible some people are just doing that too early, actually. They actually could go for a lot longer than on less products just by continuing to hammer away. Talk about the focus that you guys have had then on that one core product. Like, so if you're saying no to a lot of things, what are you saying yes to? What does that core funnel look like? And yeah, I mean, because you're growing plenty fast, right? Like you're going to double again, it looks like, you know, and get into the mid eight figures here. So it makes sense to me to say no to some other things. Like it's actually really hard to grow too fast in a business. And so like, you know, if you guys grew a lot faster, especially at this stage, it would create its own challenges. So it makes sense to me to say no to all these other things, other products and go to the US and all that kind of stuff. And when we've done coaching calls, right, like it's like we're constantly evaluating those ideas. And I joked actually at some point with somebody and just said like, my job every single time I talk to you is to tell you to say no to stuff. That's pretty much it. But yeah, in the midst of that, it's because you're saying yes to something really good. Can you just talk through like what that funnel is, what you're saying yes to, and how you're thinking about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're saying yes to our current funnel, which is a subscription to Counterclean, the subscription quarterly. So, you know, part of the game is just how can we invest as much as possible into new customer acquisition, but without breaking the business and without ruining that dynamic. And that's the really hard part, because we probably could spend a lot more than we're spending now, but maintaining that dynamic and also not diluting it with poorer customers or poorer funnels is a big focus.
So you've got Counterclean, this core product. Tell people about that funnel that you're driving people through and this incredible money printing machine you have here. What is it that is doing that? And say more about what you're saying yes to, essentially.
Sure, yeah. So the funnel is... like a kind of starter kit. You get everything you need to start cleaning with Perlium Fig, and it's sold on a quarterly subscription. So you get the starter kit on your first order, and then you get refills on your ongoing orders every quarter. So it's a really simple website, really simple landing pages, all driving to the same fundamental product listing, essentially, that works really nicely. When I say what are you saying yes to? So I set the target for the team this year, and we had a huge strategy day, and there was only one objective for the whole year, and that was to hone the model. That's it. So that's all the team are focused on doing is improving that funnel, because even though it's good, it's actually under-optimized still, and there's a lot we can do to both improve the CAC and to improve the LTV just by playing with the customer experience, And so that's all the team is focused on. I mean, it's a super tight focus. Like, that's what we said yes to, is just make that model better. And that model, really, if you think about the component parts of the model, it's your CAC, it's the revenue you're getting per customer, it's the margin you're getting from that customer as well. So both margin on a contribution basis, a gross margin, and then net margin when you include fixed overhead. And then essentially your retention, which is a function of, well, is a leader into your revenue per customer for the year. So those are the areas that people are focused on, just improving those fundamentals.
And you've driven all of that growth through this core offer or two. You've done some testing there. And I know your spend has grown over those couple of years, all against this one offer. What are the elements that has made it so your spend has grown? I mean, maybe one way to ask it is, have you taken a higher CAC to do that? Or is it like, or no? You know?
No. No, we joke about this with the Kinship guys who we work with. We've got a very weird relationship with volume and CAC. We've got the only inverse relationship they've seen, where the more we spend, the lower our CAC goes, which is really funny. And I think it's a function of product quality and virality we get from people who love the product. But we've grown spend by about 500% actually in the last year. So grown it by a huge amount. There were kind of two drivers. So one driver has been creative, and we built an absolutely creative machine around Meta Creative. So we've got 4 full-time video editors. We've got 3 full-time creative strategists now in the team, and all they do all day is create Meta ads. I actually spoke to one of the strategists before this call, and I said, how long have you created 1,000 ads? And he said, oh, well, I'm doing about 200 ads a month, so I'll be there in 2 months. And I said, great. Well, we're going to have a big party when you create 1,000 ads.
That's awesome.
And I was like, you know, it's pretty cool to create 1,000 ads for a company. So yeah, the strategists and the video editors just create hundreds and hundreds of ads a month.
How many total ads between that whole team? How many total ads do you think you're getting out in a month at this point?
Well, including our internal ads and seeding, we're probably getting about 600 ads a month.
Yeah, that's awesome. All running through cost caps?
Yes, all running through cost caps, yeah.
Yeah, like 100% of the spend, I think, right?
Yeah.
And you're getting a massive spend through that. That result of that on the creative side, let's hang there, because I know there's another element of this, but let's hang there, creative. So this actually speaks to, I was having a conversation with another coaching client yesterday, where we were talking about, like, okay, what would you do next? They were asking me, like, to kind of build and scale this operation to kind of grow it forward. And I said, well, like, you know, I've said, like, I think Meta Creative happens in 2 stages. The first stage is creative strategy. And there are some big gains to be had there, which is like, we are honing in on what the best messages that seem to resonate with your customers are. And really, that gets you pretty far pretty fast. Like, if you can go find that and testing ad types and all that kind of stuff. But then stage 2 is creative process, which is a very different problem. I mean, you're talking about 4 editors and 3 creative strategists. That means those people need to know, like, who they report to. They need to know what their KPIs are. They need to know how many ads they're expected to produce every month. They need to know if they're producing long or short form ads. They need to know how much creative freedom do they have. They need to know the process that goes from brief. This is actually something that is really friction filled. It's how do you go from brief, or let's even say before brief, how do you go from idea, creative idea, to production? There's like 6 steps in there, right? It needs to be briefed. It needs to be shot. Needs to be edited. It needs to be built in the ad account. It needs to be measured over time or whatever. You need some probably some feedback on it or whatever. And somewhere in that process, there's some approvals, you know, whether that's you decide, yep, the editor gets final approval or the creative strategist gets final approval. Do you have revisions? All those things. So the idea of like scaling up your operation that much is actually really hard. It requires a bunch of work and like getting a good task management software. And I don't even know what you guys are using for all this stuff, but like that's a huge job. And so scaling up your spend that much is this core problem. And when I think about the idea of like, when people say to me, like, it's time to diversify your ad spend, you know, or it's time to diversify my ad spend, what I usually say is like, don't do that. Instead of diversifying your ad spend, get better at the current channel that you're in, because there's actually way more room to get better than most people realize. Most people think that like, oh, they've kind of tapped out the channel. And I'm like, no. Jack Rubin has 4 editors full time, 3 creative strategists full time, produce plus influencer seeding, plus whatever organic stuff you're doing that you can put in the ad account. And the net result of that is 600 ads a month going into this ad account, and they're still growing, and they're still not really, maybe just now you're starting to think about other channels a little bit more, and you're building a mid eight figures business in the UK only. You know, that's with a quarter of the total addressable population as in the US, right? So there's just really far to go. Now, you guys have this advantage of having a whole bunch of returning customer revenue as well, which definitely changes the potential value creation of the ads and some of that. So maybe other brands listening to this can't go quite as far as you could go, depending on the potential value that your meta ads can even create. But for you, like, that is a massive operation. Has that been hard to build for you guys?
It's not been too bad. I mean, we've just got some star employees, really, who I can't take a huge amount of credit for it, who have just led the charge. And you met Camilla, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's built an incredible team beneath her and managed them really well. You just kind of need to find those kind of rock stars. Yeah. That really helps.
Yeah. Okay. So what else has done it besides creative?
Yeah. So there's creative, which I kind of see as the entry point. And then once they're on your site and once they're part of your world, there are kind of three areas that I look that we optimize within that. So you've got your funnel, your core funnel. So what are you presenting to them as the proposition? So that's, are you doing a starter kit with 3 concentrates, 4 concentrates, 2 concentrates? What scents are you going to offer? Are you going to offer signature scents or seasonal scents? Are you going to give them a cloth in that first bundle? It's kind of like, what are you offering the customer and optimizing that? The second is the value proposition. So essentially messaging. And there's a lot you can do to hone your messaging and get that absolutely right. Like the hierarchy of messaging, how effectively are you articulating, like, you know, the core value proposition and brand positioning. And then the third is how are you actually setting customers up post-sale? For us, that's a big thing. So what is their actual subscription experience look like? What are the set of emails they're getting? What do they get on their second order, third order? There's a lot to do in that area to improve LTV. So that's kind of like those two buckets, essentially. When I
say those three things again on the site, just really fast, rattle them off.
So the core funnel, the value proposition, and then the post-purchase experience.
Yeah, cool. Which one of those do you think of the offer in? Do you think of that as the core funnel?
I would say that there's the core funnel, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And are you guys doing like CRO testing or anything like that as part of that?
We have done some CRO stuff. What I've found is that it can be too minor and you don't really get the heart of the problems. Yeah. I mean, what you want to be really, you want to be, especially if you're small, you want to be asking questions about your funnel that are the big questions. Like, how should we model our site experience? You know, what is the best way to drive, you know, effective messaging on the website? And then you want to be reworking your experience based on those kind of questions rather than kind of, you know, making tiny adjustments. Yeah. That's how we prefer to do it. So I wouldn't really call it CRO. I would call it kind of reworking everything you're doing all the time.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, it's interesting because you know, I've talked about that a little bit too. I think there's probably a day where you could start to play with more CRO because now you're doing this at so much scale that like, could learn pretty fast about what's working and what's not working, even on smaller changes, and potentially hammer away.
Even at our size, we're still going for the big questions.
Yeah, for sure. And that's because, yeah, there are bigger swings to take along the way. I know you guys have played with the offer quite a bit in terms of thinking about different products. Can you talk through what your core offer is and then how you've adjusted that? Do you mind if I send the core landing page or if I put that in the show notes?
Yeah, sure. It might be a bit out of date now, but you can put whatever you've got in.
Yeah. Okay. So if you check the show notes here, I've got a link to at least one of the core offer pages. Even if it's out of date, it'll give you a sense of kind of what you guys are driving people through. Just tell people what it is first, would you?
Sure. Yeah. So do you mean what the offer is?
Yeah. Literally, like, what do they get? How much do they pay and what do they get?
Yeah, fine. So the original the starter kit is normally £30 on pay as you go. If you subscribe, you get it for £15. So you have 15% off. And with that, you get a free bottle for life, which is our glass bottle for life that you get on first order. And also if you break it, you get new ones as and when you want. So it's like quite high. You know, we try and position it as a high value thing that you get for free. Yeah, that's our offer. Yeah.
Yeah. And it comes with 3 concentrates.
Yeah, three concentrates.
Three different smells.
Three different scents, yeah.
Of the cleaning product and three different scents. And those are like evergreen scents, yeah?
Those evergreen scents, yeah.
We're talking on this episode about lean OpEx as a percentage of revenue. We're talking about building a significant team at the same time, building great process around scaling something like Meta Ads. Jack's talking about adding designers and creative strategists and all of that. You can and should do that kind of thing in your business through my friends at More Staffing. Go to morenow.co to get in contact with More Staffing and build out your team in the Philippines. Incredible, hardworking, high-end talent. Don't just think about virtual assistants, $5 an hour kind of hires. Think about getting virtual professionals, people who can fill management, director level roles, even executive roles in your company. You could pay them great money in the Philippines, so you'll attract excellent talent, but it will still be less than you would pay that same talent, significantly less probably, for that same talent in the US. It is a win-win for everybody there. And so you can do all of that, and you can get help and access to that talent via More Staffing. More Staffing has been a partner of mine for a long time on this show, and I love them. I have used them to staff up my own business and have also sent many other people to them, which is why we're still working together, because the reports have been good across the board for many of my listeners and viewers who have gone to work with More Staffing. So go to morenow.co. More Staffing will help you recruit, train, coach, onboard, all that kind of stuff with talent in the Philippines. And you'll get access to amazing talent. They'll make the whole process super easy for you. They'll also give you a one-year guarantee on talent that you add to the business, so that if that new team member does not work out for an entire year, no problem. They will replace that team member for free, for no additional recruiting charge, any of that. So go to morenow.co to work with More Staffing. Go do it now. So it's positioned as 15 pounds. Again, you can click to that starter kit offer. 15 pounds is the price. When you subscribe, you sign up, you get the glass bottle, the 3 cents as the concentrates. And then the subscription is quarterly and gets you those 3 cents delivered every quarter. And that's convenient because every cent lasts about a month. And you sent me and my wife some product. We love it. It's awesome. And so, yeah, so people love it. They come back. They just keep buying it from there. The LTV on that core offer has been excellent for you, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Very, very strong.
Customers just last a really, really long time. They don't churn very much. And that's been really good. So how have you played with that offer? Because I know that's one of the major swings you can take, and what a major swing a lot of brands can take, right, is like, okay, don't just change, you know, little bits of copy on the page, don't just change the images or whatever, but change the actual offer, what people get when they pay on their first purchase. So how have you guys played with that?
Yeah, actually, so we launched a seasonal starter kit offer, which was essentially, we have these seasonal scents that come out every quarter, and we launched a new offer where instead of getting the free bottle for life, you got a free seasonal scent with your first kit, which meant you got 4 concentrates rather than 3.
Was it the same price?
So just to give people, but it was basically the same price, yeah.
Yeah.
So to give people an idea of like how much this can change your business. So we did that offer and it was phenomenal. We saw crazy increase in spend. It very quickly, we launched this offer quarterly. And I'll have 4 peaks theory. Thank you, Taylor Holiday.
Yeah.
And we just saw, you know, very quickly come 50, 60% of our spend with this new offer. And it would do incredibly well. But that was great. But then you learn that you have to also think about the back end of an offer. And what we found is that the retention on customers who came on this new offer was substantially lower than our core evergreen offer. And you'll remember, Andrew, you used to get the weekly reports with existing customer revenue, and we just kept missing. And, you know, because we had months and months of half our acquisition being this seasonal offer. It was basically the same, but just a tiny difference. You just get a 4th concentrate.
Yeah, I think it's a big difference, but yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, you think it's a big difference. Yeah, well, I've got news to you on that. So, So even though you think, oh, you know, it's just a small change, it can't make much difference, it improved CAC, it actually made a big difference on the back end. And now we pull that offer. So it's just an example of how, you know, you have to look at an offer holistically.
Yeah. Okay. So how did you actually measure the differences? And this is important because you've acquired for pretty much the entire time I've known of your business. And I think still you're acquiring customers at a loss, right? So the back end is where you make all your money. Tell me about how different was the performance in those 2 cohorts? And what did you use to measure the difference in those two different cohorts, right? And by two different cohorts, I mean not time cohorts so much as offer cohorts, right? Your evergreen customer versus your seasonal sent customer.
Yeah. So when we saw that, we were missing our existing customer targets, what do? You just dig into the data, right? So we dug into the cohorts, as you'll say, not on a time basis, but on a SKU basis. And what we were seeing is customers who came in on seasonal kit, they were churning faster. So they were churning before their first cycle, what we're calling first cycle, so first quarterly renewal, faster than the evergreen group. This meant that the first cycle, which is our where we retain up to 80% of customers on a first cycle, you know, this is where we make our money back. This is where we very, very quickly make the acquisition cost that we spent. And we were saying that this was substantially lower, like 10 percentage points up, sometimes up to 20 percentage points lower. And these cohorts were, huge difference. And these cohorts were growing. And so they were becoming a bigger and bigger percentage of our overall existing customer revenue forecast. So that all started to make sense. So then we started to think, okay, so why is retention lower on this group? And you basically have to think from first principles or try to about like, what are the differences between the propositions? So on one level, you've got the product, what you mentioned, you know, the fourth cent, the fourth extra cent. So you'd initially think, oh, that's too much product. So that's one potential reason. Then the next reason was, okay, well, they've come in on a seasonal proposition. Have they got different expectations to our normal signature customers? Are they thinking they're going to get ongoing seasonal cents? And then the third hypothesis we came up with was that they were like value seekers. So because they'd come in on a free seasonal set offer, they were very attracted to that, you know, the word free, let's say. And, you know, value seekers tend to be poorer performers when it comes to LTV. So, and then we did some survey work. We tried to validate those reasons. And, you know, because we're thinking we don't want to lose 50% of our acquisition. Like, This is a great mechanism to acquire customers.
Right, because the acquisition, even if the customer is a little worse over time, it's incremental spend. So like you want to try and solve that problem so you can maintain, you know, maybe you have to lower the CAC a little or something like that. But the ideal here is that you actually solve the problem and figure out how to retain these customers more or figure out if it's even a problem that you can overcome or whatever, right? Yeah.
But also, I even if it's incremental spend, I don't like acquiring poor quality customers when you can acquire the good ones. And I was worried, especially worrying that the seasonal groups, customers coming on this offer were cannibalizing money we were going to spend on the evergreen groups. I mean, business is basically about doing, you know, getting more. It's just trying to focus on getting more of your best quality customers. I think that's a great tenet of business. If you're an venture funded business and you're just trying to scale to the moon, you just whatever revenue you can get, but actually trying to hone your business to the highest quality customer group will keep you a much more profitable business if you do it like that. So I was saying to you, I remember on the calls, Andrew, I was saying, I'm going to turn off seasonal. Like if we can't solve this problem, I don't care what percentage of our acquisition it is, I'm going to turn it off. Because it's diluting the quality of our cohorts, it's diluting the quality of our business fundamentally.
Yeah.
So instead, what we did is like a really rigorous set of testing around these hypotheses. And we actually created propositions that solved every single problem in the hypothesis. So the first proposition was the same offer, but we swapped out one of the signatures for the seasonal. So they weren't getting an extra seasonal. It was just, they were keeping free. So that solves too much product. The next proposition.
Let me just walk that back. So instead of having, so if the theory is they're getting too much product, now you get rid of one of the evergreen scents and, you know, whatever the least popular one is, and you replace that with a seasonal scent. And so now the thing they get delivered is the same timeline as your core offer. They're getting 3 cents every single time.
Yes.
Except that one of them now is a different product than the other ones. Which I would say is still a change to the offer in the sense that offer is product and price. Those are the two elements of an offer. So now you have the same number of products, but number one.
We removed the kind of full concentrate element of it. We tried to keep all the other elements as stable as we could. And like we presented the offer in a similar kind of way. So it was still capturing maybe the other things like the value seeker element. So it was just changing one variable as much as we could, but retention was still just as low. So that wasn't the answer. It wasn't too much product. We then looked at expectations. So what we did is we said, okay, people coming on seasonal are expecting continued seasonality. So that's a customer expectation in their mind. And so what we did is we auto swapped. So the offer stayed exactly the same. We did everything the same, but we auto swapped the first recurring order to a seasonal refill pack. So they were getting essentially the new seasonal scents automatically on the second order and the third order and onwards. And
so essentially now they get three evergreen all the time. And then the fourth scent in their package every single time is a different seasonal.
No, they would actually get new seasonals every time as part of the three. So we'd swap out signatures for seasonals.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Wow. So they get all seasonal scents.
Yeah, basically all seasonal scents. Maybe if we don't have three at the time, they'll get one signature, two seasonals, or they might get two signature, one seasonal, but it was variety. The hypothesis called them variety seekers.
Yeah.
So, their expectations of variety, they want continued variety.
Yeah.
So that was the second test we did. And the third test we did was the value seekers, where we totally removed, we kept the offer the same. You got four concentrates in your starter kit, one seasonal. But we didn't say free seasonal set, right? We just, we kept the bottle for life offer. We kept it as a 50% discount. And so we removed the value seekers element. So those are the three tests we did. And on the value seeker and the too much product test, retention was down, no change. But on the expectations test, we saw a 15 percentage point bump in first cycle retention.
Crazy.
So we nailed it. We found the problem. It was all about customer expectation. And so now we can continue to do the seasonal campaigns, which drives so much value. And you can see our existing customer revenue is basically back where it was before in terms of on a cohort basis.
Yeah, I always like pointing this out with you too, that you guys forecast existing customer revenue based on your historicals, and then you measure every single week how your existing customer revenue comes in relative to forecast. And that's so important if you're going to acquire customers for a high LTV business or acquire customers at a loss, especially. So, I mean, I love that story so much because, and this is what I mean again by like great operators, it's like really smart and it allows this focus is so helpful. The methodology there and the hypothesis testing is so great around these really core things, and the difference in the performance between those three things is so massive that you like are obviously correct that you nailed it in some way or another. You know, my theory, I think when we talked about this at the time, was that it was too much product. That was what I expected it to be. That you know, was strong. And that's the whole reason to test this. It's like, I'm wrong all the time. So are you. You know, like, it's just like, I'm sure a lot of people thought that it was too much product and that's why it came up. But so then you go test it and you figure it out. What are you using a specific tool to measure these cohorts? Like, by the way,
unfortunately, it is all major number crunching in Excel at the moment.
Yeah, okay, all right.
But we are working on that.
All right, so that's awesome. And so the result of that has been really, really good. And that's helped you continue to grow, which is great. And now you can go reinvest back in the Meta machine with this other offer that really works awesome. So, and they'll go build all the creative process to go run a bunch of ads against the seasonal offer and run it alongside your starter kit and now, you know, keep the machine pumping. Okay, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I think that's a really good example of just like a well-built machine. Do you want anything else that's going on in the business right now that's like sort of most top of mind and interesting to you about where you guys are at and what you think would be helpful for people to hear?
I mean, yeah, it might not be that relevant for a lot of people, but we talk about it quite a lot, this question of when should a performance marketing focused business think about brand and top of funnel marketing? And it's something we're thinking about a lot at this point, partly because we like to get ahead of problems and there's a pretty clear pathway for performance marketing focused brands where they just run out of road and due to market size or whatever else. And what brand can do is just to basically open up more market size to you and you can access more customers. So it's a really fascinating one. We're going hard on that. You know, it's definitely my belief that building a quality brand and investing in really strong creative at a top of funnel level will actually keep us growing for longer.
Yeah, it's you know, my response to that is that you aren't there yet, I think. I think you can go further, not just with Meta, but like, I would probably think about it like as a blended channel. You know, we've talked about this, but like, I would think about it as like, what happens if you start getting serious about YouTube? What happens if you start getting serious about, you know, whatever, maybe it's TikTok or something as like your next channel to layer on? And that might be the place I would look next, which would still be reaching new customers, but would still have this like performance element. And I think the danger always is that like brand becomes an excuse to like not hold your money accountable to producing returns. At the same time, one of the things that you guys have seen really clearly working with Kinship is that you have these moments where you keep doing influencer seeding, and it's in the short term hard to figure out exactly what the return is in terms of their original posts. Now, part of it is that their posts all go into the ad account, but over time now you've had thousands and thousands of influencer posts, and that definitely matters for why you guys have grown as fast as you have. And I think probably part of that is that people are experiencing Pretty and Fig somewhere, you know, from accounts they like and accounts they follow and some of those things. And so, yeah, it maybe is some little illustration of the way that that can actually reinforce your performance marketing and make it perform better. So it'll be interesting to hear how you guys do that. I know you enough to know you're not just going to be like, oh, let's just light $1 million on fire and like, or £1 million on fire and hopefully it works, you know? So you guys will definitely measure it and think about the effect of it based on these real numbers. So if anybody's well suited to start to play around with some of that money, it's you. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? You've had Cody on the show a few times. Like, he's done a lot of TV, hasn't he? And that's gone really well for him.
Cody Plofker from Jones Road. I've done a couple episodes with Cody. I don't think that's brand marketing. I think that's still performance marketing. It's just in a new channel. So, I mean, it may help brand as well in some respect. But I think the distinction I would make is what's the main goal and what's the byproduct? So I would say, like, Meta, the main goal is performance. You're aiming at a return. And the byproduct of that is a whole bunch of clicks and views and a brand awareness and brand equity building that comes downstream from that as well. And then, you know, I would say the same thing is happening there for Cody and TV, which is like he's trying to generate sales directly. And the byproduct of that is brand awareness and brand, you know, brand equity. So that's probably the way I would frame it is to think about that. And then you just measure the difference in the return from those things. But I actually haven't heard Cody really talk too much yet about the total effects of TV and all that. I know he seems to be up, you know, positive towards it so far. And of course, like there's nothing magical about Meta. Like if the thing that's magical about Meta is the algorithm is so good and the machine learning is so good. So the targeting is so good, but ultimately it's a video view on a platform. Like and people have to be sold by the creative, et cetera. It just has to be the right person. So at some point, of course, other channels can do that. Of course, if you watch a video on YouTube versus Meta, does it really, I don't know, there's or on TV versus Meta, like as long as there's a clear way to go buy the product afterwards, it's not necessarily the case that it can't work. No, it's just a matter of like how tight the targeting is. So yeah, with Meta, it's so tight that you just waste so little money in the process. All right, Jack, thanks so much. People should follow you. You are generous with information and they should definitely follow you on Twitter in particular. So I'll put a link to Jack's Twitter in the show notes. Anywhere else you want people to follow up with you or anything like that?
Yeah, no, Jack Rubin 1 on Twitter. Okay. And that's it. Yes.
All right, man. Thanks again so much for your time. All right. If I sound a little gross on this episode, sorry about that. I'm a little bit sick, but you know, got to press on, play through the pain. Jack is awesome. And it is really an amazing business. I hope that was helpful to you as it was to me. Actually, just another reminder of what excellence really looks like in driving core business around a great product that people love and come back and buy more of and how to scale that up. If you would like to hear more from me, you can find everything that I'm doing at ajfgrowth.com. You can also reach out to me at podcast@ajfgrowth.com or follow me, DM me on Twitter, or you know what, tag me publicly and argue with me or suggest something or something like that so people can see it at Andrew J. Ferris. That's where all that is. Don't forget that virtual assistants can be helpful, but virtual professionals can change your business. You can find virtual professionals in the Philippines for your business through More Staffing by going to morenow.co. And more good stuff coming very, very soon. As I've said, I've got another Opening the Books episode coming up with a small but very quickly growing men's personal care brand called Pretty Boy. That's going to be really good. So make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on that. And yeah, if you liked this episode, the number one way you could say thanks to me is actually not by rating and reviewing the show, though that's helpful too. It's by sharing it with somebody who you think would love it as well. That is, people say 50% of all new podcasts downloads come from our new podcast listeners come from sharing. And so if you would do that, I would appreciate it so much. Thanks again for listening and for watching. Talk to you next time.